Welcome to a very late edition of What the Batch. Sure. I don't know the numbers. I've lost track of the numbers, both in terms of my fake season 2 renumbering and also whatever the actual numbers are.
It's 15, so I think that makes... Is this 4?
No, it's got to be like 5 at least. I think... I don't know. Regardless, Paradise is nearing an end.
Mm-hmm.
This
as,
week...
As Paradise must...
Yes, all good things must come to an end.
And good. The jury's still out on that.
I mean, I can't even necessarily defend some of what happens this week, so...
Oh, boy.
Thankfully, it was only 3 hours this week.
Hey, what happened to the missing last hour?
We didn't spend any time in the studio with Chris Harrison, which I'll take as a personal gift.
I like to think that they thought... What'll make Wes happiest?
I like to think that they realized that they could not leech any more out of that one day of studio time that they had, that they've been, like, pulling apart for weeks on end.
So what did they replace it with?
Nothing. I mean, it just was 3 hours instead of 4 hours. I mean, what did they replace it with in terms of what aired?
Yeah.
I think Black-ish, but
Okay. Natural
progression of viewership from...
Bachelor in Paradise to Black-ish.
Yeah, the racially insensitive Bachelor in Paradise to the culturally specific Black-ish. This week on Paradise, we were treated to the bottom of the barrel, which is to say that every year on this show, when you get to the second to last day or last day of Paradise, people that you really don't care about, who weren't worthy of being in the initial cast, are released into Paradise as cannon fodder, because after 14 days, which is misrepresented as 5 weeks, the contestants don't really care about, you know, whoever's wandering down these stairs, because you can't make a connection in 12 hours. That would lead to...
I think you're underestimating some people.
Well... It's all kind of silly because most of these connections were probably born over 12 hours, you know, but like everyone treats it like, well, they just got here too late. They just got here too late every year without fail. This year, Blake E. enters Paradise to the least fanfare I've ever seen a person enter Paradise.
Paradise was just like, well, guess he's here.
You might remember Blake E.
I know there were two Blakes.
Yes. Blake K, the one that the internet still weeps over having been eliminated very, very early in Rachel's season because
was he the vet?
He was the vet who is like an Asian guy, particularly good looking.
Look at me with the remembering thing.
Blake E is Waboom's arch nemesis.
Oh, right. The one who like stole his girlfriend or something.
Yes. There's no point to inviting Blake to Paradise if you're not going to invite Waboom.
Sure.
And... For all intents and purposes, they did not invite Waboom, because if they had, he would be there.
What a syllogism.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any world in which Lucas says, no, I'm not going to Paradise if they call him.
Well, no, he's still got a brand.
Exactly. He could be, like, that. The kind of brand extension that could be happening in Mexico is tremendous.
Man, why hasn't Lucas been like, hey, put me on, coach?
Immediately, though, every girl... When they see Blake come down the stairs, just sort of collectively look at one another and go, yeah, we don't want to go on this date. He has a date card.
Of course he does.
It's simultaneously very sad and very amusing, because he then pulls the girls aside one by one to just check in about how committed they are to not going on a date with him.
Like, he already knows that they're not going to go on a date with him?
I mean... He read the room fairly accurately in that they all kind of looked away when he came down the stairs.
Oh, buddy.
And the guys were like, yeah, everyone's pretty coupled up. You know, I don't know if you're going to have a ton of luck. He smells disaster all over Christina.
Which one is she?
The one who Dean has been two-timing.
Oh.
The Russian.
Right.
And he thinks, well, maybe I can offer her a nice alternative. I can be not Dean.
Revenge date?
Yes. And even when presented with a revenge date, Christina goes, I just don't think that's a good idea for me right now.
Poor baby.
I think it makes more sense for me to stay here and figure out things with Dean. Now, Blake went on another podcast this week and claims that he asked Christina, if I were to ask you after I talked to all these girls, would you say yes?
Mm-hmm.
So as to not be shot down when he eventually did ask her. But when she said, she was like, yeah, if you asked me, I'd probably say yes. I guess by saying probably, she left herself that out.
Yep. Saying there's a chance.
So they don't show any of that. They just cut it so that it looks like he goes to her, she's his first choice, and she just goes, no. And the thing is, there aren't really many options left because Taylor and Derek are very coupled up. Raven is not going to go on a date with him. She's set with Adam over in that corner of the universe. Jasmine doesn't have anyone, but also vocally told him that she would not go on a date with him before he could even ask, like, would you go on a date with me?
She's like, nah.
She's like, just so you know, that's not going to happen. D'Lo, Dean's other paramour, was too busy, like, making...
She's the queen of...
No, that's Jasmine. D'Lo is the girl that everyone's jaws dropped when she walked in, and
oh,
Dean never recovered from it and continues to like be like, Christine, I just need some patience. I just need some patience. She was making googly eyes at Dean, and I think Blake was like, oh, that's definitely not going to happen for me. Because if the one who's mad at him won't go on a date with me, the one who's happy with him almost certainly won't go on a date with me.
That's some good logic.
So, by process of elimination, he's left with only Kristen. To ask on a date.
Who is Kristen?
Kristen is the virgin who went on two dates already. She went on the date with Matt, which inflamed Jasmine and resulted in Matt quitting the show.
And, oh, right.
And she went on the date with the Tickle Monster.
Oh, no.
But Kristen is better known as Scallop Fingers.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So Scallop Fingers gives Blake a hard time because even she feels like, maybe I don't want to go on this date with you. Maybe it's better for me to stay here and develop things with serial killer Jack Stone than it is to go out to wherever we're going to go. But before she can really make up a proper choice one way or another, into paradise walks Freddy. To complicate things even further for Blake, the sad panda who goes to sit in the corner as all of the women excitedly go, hey, Freddy, we're so happy you're here. Like, it's bad when none of the women want to talk to you, but it's worse when 35 minutes later a different guy shows up who finished equally bad on Rachel's season, and yet everyone's excited to see and talk to him.
Oh, no. This poor guy.
Fred is most notable for looking like the Reading Rainbow Man. And
LeVar Burton?
Yes. And having been the camp counselor, Rachel's camp...
Oh, that guy.
Yes. He kind of embraces the idea that he was the troublemaker.
Wasn't that how somebody else introduced themselves?
Well, Brian on Rachel's season said, I'm going to be trouble. But Rachel kept saying that he was a troublemaker when he was a kid in camp.
Ah.
And so all the girls are like, oh, are you still going to cause trouble here? And Freddie's like, sure. Like, if that's what you need me to be, I'll be the troublemaker. Freddie very quickly decides he wants to ask Dominique on a date.
Okay.
Much to the dismay of Diggy. But Diggy and Dominique are kind of at a place where they're not really going to say you can't go on a date to either person. So very quickly, Freddie's like, I've secured my date. Blake, can you figure out what you're doing? Because this is a double date we're going on.
And I really need you to pull through for me, bro.
Yeah, and I need you to figure this out.
Oh, no. Does this end with him asking two people on a date and it being like a triple date with a threesome squeaky wheel?
Well, fortunately for Blake, Scalafingers relents and agrees that she will go on the date with him because...
As long as she gets shellfish?
Well, she eventually gets shellfish later in the episode. But no, the date ends up being a real mistake for her.
Oh, no.
Because as far as paradise dates go, this one did not turn out well. In a rarity, the producers actually planned a date.
Oh, that's a first?
I mean, I guess going to Jorge's Torgues was planning a date of sorts. We did find out where he was conceived.
I just really want Jorge's Torgues to just be fabulous tour guides who are flamingly homosexual.
I mean, that may be where it all ends up for him. Yeah. Seeing as how he hasn't really reappeared since then. This date is a speedboat, and there's like a bounce thing, like a bounce house, but on the water.
Okay.
And it all looks like it's like a really fun adventure date, essentially. Like, it looks like the kind of thing I probably couldn't afford to pay for out of my own pocket. So in that regard, like, it's a first for Paradise. And Dominique and Freddie have a ball. Like, they're really enjoying it. Kristen, it turns out, is seasick. She's not built to be on boats that are going high speeds, nor is she particularly prepared for the ocean, in that she did not bring waterproof mascara to paradise. And she wears contacts, and one of them, like, fell out while they were, like, at sea.
Whoops.
So most of the date, Blake spends, like, rubbing her back and hoping that she doesn't vomit anymore. Oof. While she looks for her contact, see if it dropped, like, the bottom of the boat. It's the kind of date that you really can't recover from. But Blake will not be deterred, because he knows full well that if he's going to get a rose and stay in paradise, she'll be the only one that's going to give it to him. So when they return, Chris Harrison makes it clear to them that this date signals the culmination of paradise. They have one final rose ceremony, and it will be happening that night. So they have to get their shit together very quickly and figure out where everyone's rose is going. This would be...
One more time for shenanigans.
I guess somewhere before this, or in amidst this, Robbie and Amanda go on a date. It's not really too exciting. It's more like a typical paradise date. They go to a carnival of sorts. Robbie and Amanda are a nonsense couple. They will always be a nonsense couple. And
is this the one where they were trying to do a triad? Or
no, Amanda's the Robbie was like friends with her ex-fiance last season.
He's the abusive one.
Well, Josh.
Fiance.
Yeah, so it's hard for me to look at anything they do. Like, people online have really started to, like, rally for this couple.
No, if he's still friends with a person who was abusive to her, gross.
Yeah, well, it's more than that. It's like, this is an incestuous franchise, which is fine. Like, that's what's going to happen. You work, if you think about this like a workplace, people tend to hook up at the workplace.
Sure.
So,
I don't care about that. It's more that somebody who's so obviously awful and you're still like, yeah, he's one of my best friends.
That's problematic. Additionally problematic is the fact that, you know, Sarah, who is Amanda's close friend, had dated Robbie and he, like, dumped her to come on the show, which they sort of graze over and address, like, oh, I just never knew I would fall in love with someone. Like, when you were dating my friend, you just seemed like someone that I couldn't be with, but now you do. And, like, it's all just very weird and, like, kind of walking around the truth of the matter, which is that this relationship didn't have legs outside of paradise. I'm also not spoiling anything to say that it doesn't work outside of paradise, because People Magazine ran a story this week saying Robbie and Amanda split post-paradise. It's been kind of known for a while that they tried to make it work after this show. And
impressive dedication.
Well, they both live, like, L.A. adjacent. Like, Robbie's here in L.A., and I think Amanda's in Orange County, so it's not that difficult to try and really give it a go. But he went to Colorado, I think, or somewhere, and he was making out with a girl that was not Amanda at a concert, and a big fan of the franchise was right behind him at this concert.
They're everywhere.
And snapped photos of it, and then DM'd Amanda on Instagram and was like, yo, just so you know, he's cheating on you, though.
Wow. Does she have open DMs?
I guess. This person also sent those DMs, like, also sent those photos to Reality Steve. And so even if Amanda didn't check her, like,
they would have got it,
unsolicited DMs, she and Steve became close after everything went down with Josh and the end of her, you know, relationship with Josh. So it got back to her. I had heard this a while ago, but it's not something I necessarily would have put on this podcast in terms of people not wanting to be spoiled. Except now it's out there. Like, if people's going to run it as a story, then it's out to the masses. So it's hard to watch this date, which ABC really wants us to buy into as, like, this grand, like, romance, and two people who on paper are so wrong for each other, but it's just so right. And I'm like, no, they're just wrong for each other.
None of us are buying that.
Like, there's a lot of evidence to the fact that they're not right for one another. The rose ceremony is about as anticlimactic as a rose ceremony could be, with one meaningful exception. And that is Dean.
Throwing away his shot?
Well, Christina finally decides that it's time to develop a backbone. It only took her weeks. But now she's ready, because having sex with Dean and then watching him make out with D'Lo 7 hours later was enough for her to realize maybe this is not what I want it to be. And maybe Dean is never going to give me what I want. Now, here's where I have problems with the way that this all goes down. I've been saying since D'Lo arrived in Paradise that, yes, Dean is to blame, but D'Lo shares in some of that blame. Because
she's really good friends, right?
They're friends. I mean, I don't know how good they are. They went from saying, oh, we're very, very close to, oh, we're friendly, or, you know, in a matter of weeks, which happens in real life too, but if you know that your friend or even an acquaintance, like let's say it's an acquaintance, I would say they came in definitely more than that. But even if we reduced it to acquaintance, you know that your acquaintance has been seeing somebody,
right,
and that they've been sleeping together exclusively for a couple weeks, and you meet that person for the first time, and then you decide to pursue something with that person.
Cool.
You're culpable here, you know? And so, Christina pulls Raven aside, the true queen of Paradise, not the self-anointed one.
True queen, Raven, whatever her last name is.
Gates.
Sure.
And she tries to say to Raven, like, I feel like I've been very isolated here. I feel like all the girls have kind of stopped speaking to me. I feel like I don't know that I really belong here anymore. It seems like Dean doesn't want me. Christina.
Okay.
And Raven, in her heart of hearts, I think, based on just watching the footage, but also seeing, like, a clarifying tweet that she put out this week, was trying to give Christina tough love.
Okay.
Tough love should have come weeks ago. If the girl's pulling you aside and pouring her heart out and saying, like, I think that even coming back to Paradise post, like, 10-day break was a mistake, given how all this has gone down, maybe it's not the time for tough love, Raven. Like, I love you, but, like, maybe you should have just said, I hear you. If you think you have to go, Christina, then maybe it's time to go. And let, you know, D'Lo and Dean explore what they're going to explore. Christina's grievance is like, well, I feel like D'Lo is culpable here. Like, and Raven goes, no, I don't. Now, Raven's rationale for this is, if Dean is saying to her, hey, I want to explore things with you, then why would she say no to that? Same as, like, why would you say no to that, Christina? You're not going to say no to it. You've kept putting up with it the same way D'Lo's kept putting up with it. I guess. But also, like, Christina was there first. It's a territorial claim. Like, there's no other way to say it. Like, if you come in late, it's unfortunate, but you kind of have to step back and play your role. And I don't think D'Lo ever really did. She gives Dean an ultimatum heading into the rose ceremony. D'Lo gives Dean an ultimatum saying, like, if you accept Christina's rose tonight at this ceremony, then I'm done with you.
Because she's going to give him a rose?
Correct.
And how do they determine who goes first?
Well, they don't know that order when, you know, they're at the cocktail party and they're talking. So I think D'Lo's trying to get out ahead of it by saying, like, if Christina ends up slotted ahead of me, you have to say no to her. You have to say, I'm not going to take your rose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dean has enough tact to realize he cannot just do that at the rose ceremony. Like,
right.
He can't leave her hanging out there high and dry. So he does say to her in advance, I'm not going to accept your rose.
Wow.
It's time for me to explore things with D'Lo and stop, like, dancing around it. I've made my choice. I mean, you know, I don't know what there is to say. Dean was the golden boy coming into this season. He was everything that this franchise needed. He was a savior. He was supposed to be the Boy Scout of Paradise and
fucked it up.
He fucked it all up. You know, he's the definition of that Tyra Banks meme where it's like, I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. But I guess people feel the same way that I do, which is that Dean's still human and even though he's on some real fuckboy shit the entirety of the season, I think it's just he's immature and he wants to have his cake and eat it too. I went to an event this week that Ashley I from last season of Paradise threw, and there was a line out the door of women trying to take photos with Dean. Like, there's a slew of people from this franchise there, you know, and people from this season of Paradise, a lot of them.
None of them were Dean.
But yeah, in terms of trying to take photos, like Miss Teen Beverly Hills, Miss Teen Orange County, people are putting their sashes on Dean, trying to take photos with him wearing the sash. Moms who had driven from, you know, God knows where that were like,
whole family.
You're the kind of person I want my daughter to date. And I'm just like, eh, did you watch Paradise? Or are you just saying that's solely based off the Bachelorette season? Because if not, I got tapes that you should be taking a peek at. But I guess he's finally made a choice. I don't think that choice is going to be the right one or one that sticks. But here's the thing. Dean immediately, as this episode is airing, takes to Instagram and posts a photo of him and Christina in Kentucky during that 10-day break where they were like at the apex of their relationship, kissing one another. And the caption of it is, "You were always out of my league." And I know that Dean thinks this is like a savvy move, but that is next level fuckery. Like, that is the definition of a fuckboy move. Like, to say, oh, you were always out of my league.
That's why we're not together.
That's a meaningless sentence. It's a meaningless sentence, and it's one made, like, entirely meant to, like, elicit an awe reaction from 14-year-old girls watching the show.
Right.
And, like, the 700,000 that follow him on Instagram. At the Rose Ceremony, Christina gives an impassioned speech about why she's been taken advantage of in this franchise and on this show and by Dean, and why she's not going to hand her rose to anyone. She's just going to go home, hat in hand, and accept that this was a failure. She then hugs every single person except D'Lo. And the shade...
Including Dean?
Dean asks if he can walk her out, and she agrees to let him walk her out.
Okay.
At which point he's like, I just need you to know that I do love you.
Ew. Shut up, Dean.
And she's like, well, I really hope everything goes well with you and D'Lo. You know, like, best wishes. I really hope Christina's the next Bachelorette. Like, it's kind of early to be having that conversation. And with the way that things sort of work in this franchise, people may have, like, forgotten all of her hardships by the time it, you know, January. Or, no, Bachelorette starts April, by the time April rolls around. But I think she'd make a wonderful Bachelorette. I think she's very open with her emotions, and she falls very quickly, so it'd probably be very different than they've had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rachel was very guarded. JoJo was very boring. Caitlyn was a very sexual creature, but not necessarily a highly emotional one.
Mm-hmm.
So, at the very least, it'd be different compared to the last three.
That's good, at least. Variety? Or is this a situation where a lack of variety is better?
I mean, I don't know, because we can talk at the end of this. In that we're so late in recording this, we have the opportunity to discuss who they did choose as the next Bachelor, but...
It was a random person?
All things considered, I would call him random. Mike Fleiss and Alon Gale would tell you that this was a very calculated and smart move that, as superstar executive producers, they are very happy with. Yeah, the rest of the rose ceremony is kind of boring. Dean does accept D'Lo's rose. No one gives Blake a rose because Blake did nothing except... sort of just
exist
for like 25 hours in Paradise. he makes a last ditch effort that's kind of tremendous, though. He goes to Kristen and tries to talk to her about like who she's gonna give her rose to, and she's like, I can't do anything until I eat. So his ass comes back with a plate full of scallops, and he's like, I got you.
Wow.
I got you these scallops, let's talk.
Oh, was she just like...
She was amped. She was amped, but she also didn't give... He didn't bring her a fork, which...
Intentionally?
I really choose to believe that he had gotten a fork, and some producer that was on the beach took the fork off the plate and was like, scallop fingers. Has fingers. She doesn't need a fork.
Come on, buddy. Give me the program here.
I've never eaten a scallop before. I've never in 27 years consumed one. This show is not doing a very strong job convincing me that I've missed out on anything. She does eat these scallops barehanded. And then upon seeing that she looks satiated, Blake is like, time to make out.
What?
He just like leans in and like tugged down her throat, and she's like, okay, I guess we're making out now. I can't imagine that scallops are the kind of thing that you really want to make out with somebody right after.
I mean, ideally, they shouldn't have a fishy taste. I mean, they have a little bit of a flavor. It's mostly going to be butter, you know, so.
But even that, still, like, it's greasy, it's butter. Yeah. Like, I don't really want to go make out with you right after that.
Don't make out with anybody right after you've eaten anything, unless it's mint. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wait, because...
Oh, wait, there's more.
There's more, because from across the beach, the Tickle Monster sees that Blake is making out with his girl. And
I forgot that she was... Or didn't know. I don't know.
And he jets across the beach.
Did they make shark noises or something?
And says, hey, can I steal her away for a minute? And with that minute, he also makes out with her.
Just like literally spins her around and starts making out with her?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
As Blake kind of sulks off.
Into that good night.
Into the good night. But wait.
There's more.
Because Jack Stone, from across the beach, sees her making out with a Tickle Monster and realizes that, like, Kristen is his best and only hope of getting a rose. So he jets across the beach and says, hey, wait, can I steal away for a minute? And he also makes out with her. Within a span of, like, probably 5 minutes, she made out with three guys and ate some scallops.
Good for her. That sounds like the life.
Does it? Because...
In the context of the show, absolutely.
Tickle Monster is given a reprieve by Jasmine, who earlier in the day had made out with him and decided that he was a good enough kisser that she would keep him around because she didn't have anyone else to give her rose to. And Jack Stone is given Kristen's rose, which leaves Blake and Freddie P out in the cold. So they came in for that one really poor date on the boat, and then they left.
Oh, sad day.
It's a new day in paradise after this, and presumably the last day in paradise. But because filming had been hampered by shutdowns and they were not they didn't have enough footage for a Tuesday night episode, they did what they do best, which is they called the twins. And they said, how fast can you get to Mexico to give us something to air on the Tuesday before what our proper finale will be? Now, I don't know this, but this is what I assume deep down, because... Everything that happened in the Tuesday episode was a shit show. Just top to bottom.
Can we do Mad Libs for our next episode? Where you can play fill in the blanks.
I mean, sure. The next episode is going to be Fantasy Suites and then the reunion show. So I don't really know how that will even take shape. But if you watch reality TV and you can't see that almost everything that happened in the Tuesday night episode was manufactured, I don't know what to say.
Just go home, you're drunk.
It begins with Jamie showing up in paradise.
I don't know who Jamie is.
Yeah, because she doesn't matter.
Okay, good.
Jamie was a girl who hung around Nick's season way longer than made any sense. And whose only definable characteristic was that she was bisexual. I could tell you literally nothing about Jamie other than she has the nose ring that goes through both sides of the nose.
Okay.
Like, the septum?
Piercing?
Yeah, the septum piercing. And she's bisexual. And
well, so were they gross about the bisexual thing?
Well, in Paradise, you can ask anyone out. With your date card. So
all the girls should always be asking all the girls on dates.
So when Jamie arrives with a date card, people are like, who's she going to take? She could take a girl. Might she take a girl? Now, bear in mind you that no woman on this show has seemingly expressed any interest
right.
in women up until this point.
And she hasn't even expressed any interest in a woman from this show.
But Jamie wants to make something very clear. Whoever she asks will go out with her. She's not going to be Blakey. She will not be told no.
This seems lacking in consent.
I think it's meant to be like
funny. I'm funny, aware, or it's like not, though.
Or like she's a bad bitch. I wanted her to ask Jasmine out on a date. I thought,
well, if you're going to do that and say that, you might as well, you know, go for broke.
Yeah, because that would have been a fun date to watch. The queen of the self-anointed queen of paradise and the bisexual, who now I can say she's bisexual. She's also half black and half Italian. I learned that from Paradise.
Oh, see, you're so learning about people.
I've added a third fact about Jamie to my Rolodex. I will forget it within 3 weeks. It explains a lot about, like, her very kind of curly hair and her unique features, though, because
sure.
I would not have been able to guess her ethnicity if she hadn't laid it out. She chooses to go on the date with Diggy. This is very upsetting to Dominique, who apparently forgets that she went out on a date with Freddie the day before. So she does a fair amount of sulking while Diggy and Jamie go on a date that I can't describe to you because they showed none of it.
That seems in keeping with the spirit of the show.
Per Diggy on Twitter, it was a great date, and they're
happily in love now?
No. He's going to eliminate her. But they're happily... but it was it was a great date, and they did things involving, you know, riding around in a Jeep, which I think you can do in Los Angeles if you just find someone that has a Jeep.
You can do that anywhere?
Yeah, I don't know. Diggy didn't do a good job explaining it on Twitter either, but they only show, like, the two of them sort of making out and eating. So it looks like they just went to a dinner date. I guess there's more to it than that. Either way, this couple doesn't really have the chemistry that Diggy has with Dominique, so it's... in a lot of ways, a retread of Dominique and Freddie, where, sure, I'll go on a date with someone else, but the chemistry is lacking comparatively to what was already, you know, back in Paradise. As they return from their lackluster date, the twins arrive. And I love the twins. This is...
we know.
Yes. This is a well-documented fact. I watched all of their show, which I learned this week from Haley may, in fact, be the lowest-rated show in the history of Freeform Network. When I asked her straight up, so you and your sister, are you going to do a second season? She was like, no, that's going to be a hard no. Even if we wanted to, I don't think anyone else is asking for that. I would watch.
I think we all know that.
I told her that. I told her, look, I know it would be bad, but I would watch it.
She watched it even when it was actively really bad.
And it was actively bad from moment one. The twins are franchise royalty at this point. Whether or not people are willing to admit that, I saw some of the reviews of this week's episode that view them as, like, patsies. And I guess they are, to a degree, but...
but complicit patsies.
Yes. They know the role that they're playing. They were the stars of Paradise last season. Easily the best part of it, and kind of what made it fun. And I think that's what's lacking from this season. They then use that as a springboard, and by they, I mean the executive producers, to send them to liven up Ben and Lauren's show, which was boring. And then they got their own show, which miscalculated and fundamentally misunderstood what made them entertaining. So it was like, let's beat the same joke into the ground for 10 weeks, which is like, they're dumb. And they're not even dumb. They're ditzy girls, but like, they have a head on their shoulders. Like, they have a savvy enough business plan that they have like made a living off of this franchise for 2 full years now, and they're still
going strong.
Like,
well, this is the thing, when anybody tells me, you know, girls ditzier or something, it's like, well, how much of that is a calculated thing? Like, Paris Hilton, she's not ditzy.
Yeah,
she plays that on TV because she knows people pay her shit ton of money for it, but she's actually incredibly smart, and she does not talk in that baby voice if you actually meet her in real life as a business person.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of that is just playing into expectations.
Yeah. When I say ditzy, I do believe that, like, they did not know. They thought Mexico was an island. I believe that. but do you know how many people, you know, 25-year-old women or 25-year-old men, too, that if you went to and asked, like, geography questions, would have no idea?
Oh, they do that. It's on BuzzFeed all the time.
Yeah. So
it's sad.
It's not as if, like, they're, you know, an island unto themselves here and not knowing that.
Right.
Other things, it's definitely editing. And you can see where, like, the chopping is if you're looking for it. So, like, they do an ITM where Haley seemingly mistakes scallops for being a plant.
But I can see that, because I could see somebody thinking scallions.
Okay, I'm glad that you said that, because what literally happened was she misheard the producer and said, scallions, isn't that a plant? But they cut it, so it just looks like, isn't that a plant, was all that she said.
Right.
That's, you know, that's the editing there, because it makes them look dumber than they are. Now, this episode also made them look way bitchier than I think they are, because it was seemingly as if the producer said, we're going to have you drop in on the very last day of Paradise. There's no way that you're ever going to, like, have a date. Like, this, the whole thing's pretty much shut up and ready to go home. But just cause some havoc. Give us an hour of television because we have some slots to fill. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you pat our back, we'll pat yours down the line with something else.
Sounds plausible.
I don't think that they, talking to both of them this week and then also reading their tweets, I don't think that they were prepared for just how bad that they would look and how few people would understand, like, the...
They were asked to do this, not...
Yeah, that they're acting. That, right. That they're really playing it up. Because my mom, even, who has gotten into this franchise and who's seen the twins before, texted me yesterday, like, I don't know what happened to them, but they got to be really mean now. Aww. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably a very fair representation of a lot of people watching this. They call D'Lo boring. They call the girls sluts. The other girls that are there. They throw a temper tantrum because Emily had a very clear goal coming into Paradise, which is that she wanted to take Dean on a date.
Okay, good to have goals.
Now, whether this was her real goal or the goal that was implanted in her head by producers when she arrived in Mexico, I really won't know.
Straight beamed into her bachelor implant.
I won't know, and she wouldn't answer for me when I asked her. Because I did, because I don't care. And Haley said, oh, I really want to take Derek on a date. Now, Haley...
Who's Derek?
Derek's the guy that's in the very serious... The only serious relationship in Paradise with the low emotionally IQ girl...
Oh, right.
They just kind of keep to themselves, and we haven't really seen much of their story at all.
They're just off doing whatever, canoodling.
Yeah. So Haley walks in, sees that, and goes, yeah, that's not going to work for me. I'm going to have to pivot here. So she goes and asks serial killer Jack Stone, who's, like, all too happy.
Of course he is.
To go on a date. Emily devotes all of her attention to Dean. And she is unrelenting in trying to convince Dean to go on this date with her. Dean does Dean things, which means he giggles and he smiles a lot and he runs his hands through his hair and says he thinks, and this is a truly amazing sentence. No. Like, Dean, part of this is editing, but part of this is you digging a hole all the way to China.
Digging a hole, digging a hole.
He looks at Emily and goes, not only would it be a disservice to D'Lo if I went on this date with you, but it would be a disservice to Christina.
Oh, no.
Because she left so that I could explore something real with Danielle.
God damn it, Dean.
That's not why Christina left, Dean. Christina left to save any self-esteem that she still had and to preserve, like, to save face. But, you know, Dean's convinced that's why Christina left, and he's also convinced that he needs to give it a really fair shot with D'Lo. So Emily only has one thing left to do at that point. Get D'Lo to say, it's okay for Dean to go on this date.
Godspeed.
She doesn't necessarily get that, but she does get D'Lo to be like, well, if Dean wants to go on this date, I'm not going to stop him from going on the date.
Right, which anybody knows is he better not.
But Emily has a role to play.
Right.
And that role is to go back to Dean and say, she didn't say no. She said, if you want to go on the date, then you should. And I know you want to go on the date with me, because how could you not want to go on a date with me?
And Dean's like, wait, did she really say that? Great.
I was expecting this. At this point, if you're Dean, why not go on the date? That's my personal opinion, because nothing real is going to happen with D'Lo. Like, you fucked things up with Christina already. You might as well go on the date with Emily. You got nothing to lose. I would even, given his, like, fuckboy shenanigans this season, I would have just gone straight to D'Lo and been like, I think I have to go on this date just to be polite. Like, she seems really relentless, and I don't want to leave her with no one to go on the date with. Now,
you can also off-camera be like, hey, you know that they're bachelor royalty or whatever, and
But D'Lo probably would have said there are other people to go on a date with, and and they can, well, they can figure it out. Like, it's not your job to, like, pad Emily's ego. Dean stands his ground, surprisingly, and, like, flat out refuses to go on the date.
Wow.
Which leaves Emily to ask the Tickle Monster. Now, the way that she asks him is also fantastic, because he's just, like, asleep in a villa, just, like, passed out. And she, like, goes and wakes him up and says, hey, you want to go on this date with me?
Please tell me it was the most awkward, like, am I still dreaming moment.
It was kind of, I've never seen the Tickle Monster so excited about anything. Like, he immediately shot up, ran his hands through his hair, and was like, yeah, I'll be ready in, like, 10 minutes. And in the ITM, he was like, yo, Emily's hot. Like, super hot.
She asked me on a date.
I'm going on a date with her. This is a real win for me. This is, like, the highlight of paradise so far. And then Jack Stone has to go screw it up.
Oh, Jack Stone.
Because he suddenly gets a conscience. And realizes that to go on this date with Haley would be an affront to the burgeoning relationship he has with Scallop Fingers. Not to say anything of the three men she made out with the night before, including him, but she gave him her, you know, her rose, and he needs to honor that.
Uh-huh.
So, as Haley and Emily are waiting to go on the date, fully dressed, makeup done, hair done, everything, Jack Stone backs out of the date.
Oh, buddy.
And the girls become tornadoes, tearing through the villa, and
their twin sisters on a mission of
revenge. Yelling at everyone, flipping people off, and then getting somebody in production to give them scallops so they could pelt people with them.
I mean, why bring her into it? It's not her fault.
Now, again, and this is where, like, if you can't see the seams in the editing, you're not looking. Because, yes, they storm off the beach. And yes, the syndicate believes that someone in production told Jack Stone to back out of this date.
Of course.
Because he can't possibly think what he has with Kristen is real unless he's a delusional idiot.
Which, you know, it may be a combination of those two things.
Yeah. But the girls actually pelting people with scallops is so clearly inserted in afterwards. Like, they're standing away from everyone, throwing scallops at nothing, and then they don't even really cut to the other cast members. They just sort of, like, insinuate that they're chucking them at the cast members.
But you never see anyone actually get hit.
No.
That's dumb.
So, again, acting with a capital A.
Oscar worthy? Emmys? At the very least?
No. Razzie award winning.
Oh, hey, that's legit.
If they had TV categories. No sooner are they gone that... Well, actually, that's not true. People go to sleep, whatever. Next day, sun's out. And sun's out, so is Chris Harrison. He's back. And he's ready to tell everyone some shocking news.
Was he sitting pensively on the beach, waiting for everyone to wake up?
I wish. No, he just sort of walks through the camp and goes, all right, everyone meet me at, like, the same place we had our fireside chat that we should all pretend never happened.
I thought that was in studio.
No, the fireside chat where he warned them all and had them vote about whether they wanted to return to paradise was in Paradise.
Literal fireside chat, and they were already there. Okay, yes. Noted.
What made it ridiculous. They were already back in paradise deciding if they wanted to come back to paradise.
Right.
And the shocking news that he has to deliver to them, which should not shock anyone at all, neither cast member nor audience, is this is their last day in paradise.
Isn't that prearranged and scheduled?
Correct. But, man, do these cast members do a good job selling how shocked they are. They know exactly how many days they're supposed to be in Mexico. Like, you can count. You can count how many days you've been there. You know that you got to do fantasy suites, still, which means that, like, you have a full night worth of that.
The artifice of this
so,
is lacking.
And that's just how they end. They end with everyone fake shocked.
What kind of an ending is that? Shouldn't you, like, at least pretend there's some sort of question as to who's going to fantasy?
No, because they want the audience to be real shocked that that Paradise is almost over. But, like...
But nobody is!
Also...
Why would anybody be shocked unless you were giving it extra episodes or, more appropriately, cutting some back?
Scenes from next week reveal that fantasy suites are going to bring people closer together and tear others apart.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
They also reveal that the pre-taped but fake live reunion show, DeMario and Corinne will sit together on a couch.
Well, even I have seen trailers with them sitting next to each other.
Like, so I was correct that they were going to leech this for even more time later on. I've heard that there were a great deal of fireworks at the fake live reunion show.
Like Tony Stark levels of fireworks?
Well, somebody gets engaged. That's not shocking. But I also hear that there is a comeuppance for Dean from both women. That has me very excited.
Okay.
I don't really know the degree of it beyond that, but I'm very excited to see these two women finally team up to take him to task for being, you know,
a fuckboy.
His the worst version of himself.
I'm looking forward to hearing that recap.
But to segue, because Dean assassinated his character, and Peter decided that he would not sign any sort of contractual document forcing him to get engaged at the end of The Bachelor.
Mm-hmm.
We have been gifted Ari Leidendeck Jr. as our next Bachelor. If you're listening and you're wondering, who is Ari Leidendeck Jr.? So was I when I woke up yesterday morning and read that.
You are not the only one.
It's not unknown that I only started watching these things, you know, like 2 years ago. Ari appeared on this franchise 5 years ago. That was the last time he appeared on a Bachelor related thing. Almost six.
Oh, that's been a while.
So they went deep into the archives for this one.
That doesn't bode well.
I mean, I have so.
I'm sad that everyone can't see the way you just sort of bowed your head, like, ugh.
I have so many problems with this choice. Like, just a litany of problems. First of all, if Peter didn't want to sign a contractual document saying that he was going to propose at the end,
then don't make him?
Then don't make him. He's still the person that everyone wanted to be the Bachelor. And when this show started, you did not have to propose at the end. That was not a prerequisite. Like, it's only happened within the last several years that became, like,
does
fundamental.
Does that mean you're in breach if you don't propose?
I guess.
Like, what are they going to do in that case?
Not pay you?
That seems real sketchy.
The whole thing is, if you're Peter, right, and you made a whole thing about how you only want to propose once, then you don't want to be told that you're contractually obligated to, because, like, what if you realize that they didn't find anyone right for you
even? Then that's what I'm asking.
You know, like, the whole thing's a setup. He wrote a very... So Peter's good. Let me tell you, Peter realized that they needed him
more than
he needed them. Yeah. And he played hardball through the entire negotiations. Now, they called his bluff, and he wasn't willing to kowtow, and they had to go in a different direction.
That's what happens when you're not actually bluffing.
But he wrote a very pointed Instagram post yesterday. And to say that you wrote an Instagram post is still funny to me, because, like, I think of Instagram as a photo and, like, a one-line caption.
Right.
But he wrote three paragraphs underneath a photo of him looking pensively out of the sky, in which he thanked everyone for his time and for ABC for embracing him. But he recognizes that his days with the franchise are now over and that he needs to pursue new things. It was...
It's a flounce.
It was very subtle and passive-aggressive and very smart, because if you read it and you're already a Peter stan, which there are many... You're definitely going to back him. But if you read it and you're just pissed that Ari is the next Bachelor, you're going to be like, fuck you guys. Yep. Because Peter would have done this if you just let him do it his way. Now, with no Peter and no Dean, the correct choice here was Eric. The correct choice was probably Eric.
The black guy, yes. Who got eliminated last.
Yes. Correct choice was probably Eric regardless. But it was definitely Eric once...
Those two passed.
Once those two were, like, out of the running. And if it wasn't Eric, then I would have loved to see Kenny. Because if we're going to go to, like, a random outside-the-box pick...
Right, then Kenny and his adorable daughter.
Exactly. I've been hearing things back and forth the last 2 weeks about who it was going to be and who they were talking to. And some of it's written on the internet. Like, you can kind of see... And Mike Fleiss's tweets were ridiculous. He... drag this out way too long. And I think it was because he was just hoping that Peter would come around. And so he was trying to drum up excitement while also locking down those contracts, which he then ultimately could not lock down. But I heard that they spoke to... They talked to Dean about it. They obviously were in negotiations with Peter. They had spoken to Wells, but they decided that Wells didn't have the charisma to carry a season by himself. That is retarded. Like, Wells has been your entire source of comedic relief this season on Paradise, and the guy is a syndicated talk show host, or like a radio talk show host. You know, of course he has the charisma to carry the franchise. What you're saying is you don't know if he's attractive enough for what you're looking for in a in a bachelor, which is a different conversation, right? And also a potentially more problematic one that you're trying to evade by the language that you use.
Sure.
What I heard is that it ultimately came down to Jared Haben, who was on Caitlin's season of The Bachelorette and also the last two seasons of Paradise, Paradise 2 and Paradise 3, but not this year, and then Ari. Ari was considered for The Bachelor twice already and turned down twice. They turned him down. He was the final two for The Bachelor two different times, and they were like, no, this doesn't work.
So this seems like, well, either you turned him down for, like, real legit reasons, or it seems like this is his moment.
I would say this is recycling trash.
Oh, okay.
The first time around, it was him or Sean Lowe, and they picked Sean Lowe because he was on Emily Maynard's season, which was a very weird season of this franchise. I did not watch because it predated me, but I guess because Emily was a single mother, they filmed a lot of it very close to her house so that she could still be with her daughter, which is antithetical to, like, the globe-hopping show that it is.
Right.
But Sean is really indisputably the best bachelor that they've ever had. And he's the only one through 21 seasons that's married to the woman that he picked. So you could look at that and go, well, if you had to choose between Sean and Ari, you pick Sean. They made the right choice, and that all worked out well for them. But then the following season, they didn't have a very strong crop of guys from whoever's Bachelorette season that had been. So they were looking at Chris Soules because he was wealthy and owned a farm.
Okay.
And then they looked at Ari again because Ari is wealthy. Ari is part of the Lion Dyke fortune. He's also an IndyCar driver, so he's wealthy in his own right.
Sure.
And it was like, well, which kind of rich do we want? Do we want, like, white-collar rich or blue-collar rich? And they decided they'd never done blue-collar rich before, so they went with Chris Soules.
Okay.
At this point, Ari becomes a relic of yesteryear, right, because he's never been discussed again since then. So it's hard to not look at this and go, well, Ben Higgins didn't want to come back and do this again. And Peter couldn't make the contracts work. And Dean character assassinated himself. And Wells, I guess, isn't attractive enough for you guys. And Jared isn't rich. So by process of elimination, I guess it's Ari Lyndyke Jr., who we've discussed before and we know is willing to do this and has a lot of money. But the problem with that, the fundamental problem that really kind of chaps me, is Eric and Kenny have both gone on record within the last 10 days saying that they never got a phone call from production. Not one phone call. So at that point, it's less of a wealth issue.
Right.
And entirely an issue of race.
Yep.
And I'd heard that they did not want to do two black leads back to back, and that they were really terrified, more than that, of trying to do a black male lead dating white women on the back of the DeMario Corinne saga. And if the takeaway that these producers had from that whole nightmare is that America's not ready to see a black man date a white woman on television, then they did not learn anything from what happened.
Well, because with the caveat that everything I know about that situation is from you, all of the way that people seem to be talking about it was that they were actually being decent about it not being a racial thing. I'm sure there are people on the internet and whatever who are awful and racist and et cetera, but it didn't seem like it had that undertone of, like, a black man assaulted a white woman. But again, I have not read anything, and I'm sure that news is out there.
It is out there, and also, I mean, Chris when he did his really obnoxious fireside chat, brought it up. So okay. It's been brought up on the show. Do you think that this news story became as big as it was because it was a mixed-race couple and the guy was black? So there were hints throughout this entire season of Paradise that they felt like that's why it got blown out of proportion. No. I'm sorry, no. And also, even if I'm, like, supposed to believe that, then you have an opportunity to hear to make amends for the potentially bad vibes you've been putting out into the TV atmosphere by casting somebody like Eric and having him date women of all different races and ethnicities and saying, hey, look, it's not, like, an atrocity to have a black man date a white woman or a Chinese woman or a black woman. Like, he can date whoever he wants the same way Rachel could date whoever she wanted and pick whoever she wants. And we're here to do that because we have to make up for the mistakes that we made on Paradise and all of the negative headlines that we contributed to.
Also, let's not ignore the fact that they probably never had that question about two white people following each other.
Yeah.
Even if there was some sort of impropriety. There was never a question of like, well, maybe, you know, one white person speaks for all of us.
Yeah, it's just, it's a bummer more than anything. Like, it's kind of upsetting, and it does suggest that they didn't learn the right lesson from this whole thing. But more than that, it's just a bummer because I don't care about Ari, and they're going to try to spin this like he's from a different time before social media drove the franchise, and that's a positive because he can't possibly be there unless he's looking for love.
That sounds false.
Like, that's the narrative that they've been crafting, and Mike Fleiss tried to, like, say on Twitter yesterday that he's the most universally accepted bachelor of all time and that, like, Bachelor Nation was over the moon, and I'm like, I don't know what tweets you were reading, but, like, my feed was nothing but people who were legit pissed. So you can spin this however you want, but, like, I've got receipts. And so does all of Twitter. He at one point was a fan favorite, and I get that. And maybe he'll be a really good bachelor. I don't know. I don't know him. I didn't watch that season. I have no intention to go back and watch any of it, although I guess they're putting it all online on Hulu so that people can familiarize themselves with him.
That's one way to get replayability out of a reality show.
But I do think it's worth noting that they put out two promotional images yesterday, and he looks 10 years older in one of them than the other. Like, one is using his cast photo from 5 years ago on Emily's season, and one is, like, from Good Morning America yesterday. Oof. And the dude has aged about 10 to 12 years in the last five.
Ouch.
So he's certainly the first gray-haired bachelor. He's 35, so he is younger than Nick, but he does not look it. And without getting too deep into it, like, for people that really want to go look, and may listen to us without actually reading Reality Steve's website, he doesn't really seem like a good person.
Oh.
Like Ari. He seems like a pretty skeevy person.
Okay.
So, Mike Fleiss tried to spin this yesterday as though, like, the only reason that Steve was torching or dragging Ari was because he was pissed that he had incorrectly spoiled Peter as the bachelor. I'm like, no, that's not why Steve's doing this. Steve's doing this because his business is dragging you and this franchise and making money off of it. Like, if he had shit on Peter, he would have run that too immediately after you announced Peter as the bachelor. That's what he does. The fact that he has a ton of stuff on Ari and the fact that, like, women are coming out of the woodwork complaining already, and it's only been 24 hours, probably doesn't bode well, but they start filming in 2 weeks, and I guess we'll see one way or another.
What are they saying about him?
I mean, he was apparently dating a woman up until yesterday who found out they weren't dating anymore when he was announced on GMA as The Bachelor.
Wow, what a dick move.
Now, look, Nick did something similar with a girl from the franchise, and I think I discussed this on the podcast, but the difference there is, one, because she's from the franchise, I think she has a clear understanding of how this sort of game is played. But two, if that was the only thing, right? If that was the one thing, you'd be like, that's a dick move, but also, I get it. Yeah. He thought, this girl's not my forever person, and I have a chance to get my forever person off of the show.
Sure.
There are old girlfriends coming out of the woodwork saying that he did not treat them well and that he cheated on them. There is a woman claiming that, like, she found him making out with her 16-year-old cousin.
Oh, no.
Like, 6 months ago.
Ew.
So, like, there's a lot of shit being dragged up.
Yeah.
And some of it has potential, like, legal ramifications to it. That...
Don't they have a vetting process?
I mean, there's no way they didn't know this. It's particularly bad when Jeff Holm, who won Emily Maynard's season, who's not... Let's just say Jeff's not a great guy, and also that the producers have really turned their back on Jeff. Like, at one point, he was a favorite of theirs and also of America's, and now he's really soured his reputation with both of them. Jeff and Ari were, like, best friends coming off of that.
There you go. Like speaks to like.
And Jeff tweeted out yesterday the stories that I could tell about him.
Oh, wow.
So I guess they're not friends anymore. And I guess that, like...
Or they're both that kind of a person.
Yeah. That even the guy who has that reputation within the franchise is like, I've got receipts on this guy. You know, like... Or I've got, like, stories and dirt on this dude. Which just doesn't bode well. I mean, they'll get the tabloid headlines that they want. And they'll get the attention from TMZ and people and whatnot. But...
This is gross. I'm already exactly. grossed out.
Exactly. It doesn't excite me. It's not like Eric. Eric would have been an empowering season... with a guy who really, really wants to find love.
Right.
Peter would have been a different season because it wouldn't have been about the race to marriage. It would have been about trying to find...
Like an actual connection.
Yes.
Which would honestly seems like it would be a nice change. Or at least people... The stakes almost feel higher.
Yeah. And this is why I will continue to band about Christina for Bachelorette. Like, I don't care what any of the girls are like on Ari season. They could be wonderful. But I want Christina as the Bachelorette, and anything less will be a failure in my eyes. So okay. I leave everyone on that note as I jet off here.
Is there any product we want to plug?
I mean, I didn't get any emails. I was ready. But yeah, we'll be back next week. I think it's only Monday next week. So in theory, we'll be recording something on Tuesday and posting it by Wednesday. I could be wrong, though, but I believe it's a 3-hour finale, just knocking it all out on Monday with, like, the... Fantasy Suites and then the after show.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm wrong, we'll be back later in the week. So
if you're wrong, I'll be sad.
Until then, you can find me on Twitter. I am Wesley.
I am at Alexa. What else?
Our intro music is Biking in the Park by Lee Rosevere.
Yep.
And our outro music is Are You There by Josh Woodward.
Hey, you nailed it.
Until next time.
Bye.